everybody, and welcome to our end of year function. Very proudly brought to you by the Windsor Group and the Office of Port Enrichment Committee. I'd like to welcome our guest speaker today, Fiona Maxwell. Thank you, Fiona, for your time and your ongoing support of professional development for office professionals and for agreeing to share with us today. Thank you. I would like to respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this event is taking place and elders both past and present. I also recognise those whose ongoing effort to protect and promote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures will leave a lasting legacy for future elders and leaders. Just a little bit of housekeeping. As you know, in case of emergency, please look to the Tattersall staff and they will guide you into what to do. And for the facilities, restrooms are outside, to the right, follow the hallway all the way to the end, and they're just on your left. So it's lovely to see you all. Many thanks for taking the time to come along, and it's lovely to have you all here. It is my honour to introduce our guest speaker, Fiona Maxwell, CEO at Brisbane Powerhouse. Fiona Maxwell's career has spanned the non-profit, government and university sectors in Australia and the US, in Australia and the USA. Prior to Brisbane Powerhouse, Fiona was Queensland Manager for Philanthropy Australia, establishing the Brisbane office and supporting philanthropists and non-profits alike to grow the sector. Fiona's role as Queensland Manager, Art Support Australia, encompassed growing cultural philanthropy as well as supporting the non-profit sector to build stronger and more sustainable relationships with its supporters. Prior to this role, Fiona was Executive Director of the Next Wave Festival. She's been Chair and Board Member of organisations including Industry Service and Peak Bodies, an internet startup, and a philanthropic grant-making committee. Fiona holds a Bachelor of Arts from QUT and a Master's from the University of New South Wales. Can we please make Fiona welcome?
Fantastic, thank you. I think the only emergency today is going to be the torrential rain outside. So I suggest we just stay where we are and bring on the champagne and we'll be safe. So really delighted to have received the invitation to speak today. And as I was sort of cooking this up late last week, okay, what am I actually talking about? My executive coordinator, Ange, who nominated me, said, okay, let's talk about the journey from EA to CEO. I started out in office support roles from about the age of 15, largely because I have no ability in retail and I'm absolutely terrible in hospitality. So whilst all of my friends were off having far more glamorous jobs in bars and all of that sort of thing, I was doing a very good job in engineering companies, being office support. Now, but this is the whiz bang. Ha! There we go. Now the visuals of today are mainly. I hope that's not my phone. The visuals of today are just more for sort of background. They're not hugely deep and meaningful. I have found images from all the other places I've worked, but I've worked in shipping companies and I thought this just seemed like a good image for a shipping company. So my early roles involved reception and EA duties in engineering companies. There I learnt the key skill of answering the phone in less than three rings. And that is something that to this day, if I hear a phone ringing anywhere, and I'm sure for all of you, it drives you crazy. I was possibly one of the last people ever to use a dictaphone foot controls to type up correspondence. Oh, there's still a few. So that's quite a talent of coordination. And the other exciting duty I had was hand numbering board papers with a number stamp. And if you got the number wrong, you had to like go all the way through to back to 100 to get it right. One of my most memorable experiences, because I used to work there in summer holidays and that sort of thing, so I had the job of wrapping all the corporate Christmas gifts. So there was wine, there was fruit cakes, and there were hams. And then I had the job of driving all over the countryside to deliver these things, because this was a shipping company. They had suppliers basically in every industrial estate far, far away. And so I loaded up the car with all sorts of things, including half a dozen bottles of red wine on the front seat of the car. And as you might imagine, first intersection, pull up sharply, and the wine goes shooting off the front seat and smashes all on the footwell of the car. Of the company accountant's car. One of the skills, I'm sure, of all office support is being be prepared and be thrifty. And I raced over to one of those car washers and vacuumed out the entire front of the car, paid extra to squirt, I don't know, pine forest smell everywhere. Went to Dan Murphy's, bought a couple of extra bottles of wine, and deliveries were all made. Until I returned the car back to the company accountant, and he complained bitterly about the smell of red wine that lingered in his car for some days. I then went on to work at the Biennale of Sydney, which is a great international arts festival based out of Sydney, and to reflect on... Oh, goodness. Wow, I think we are definitely here for the afternoon. That was also in the days of copying and filing all correspondence in triplicate, I don't know what they did with the vast amount of paper, and copying, photocopying faxes, because faxes came on that really flimsy, plasticky paper that faded within days. One of my roles was to book the travel for the 50 international artists that were coming from all around the world. And it was interestingly in the era just of the introduction of e-tickets, but still the existence of paper tickets. So sort of themes of my great disasters, actually, in this speech, I think. I received an email from a guest from France about 2 days before she was due to arrive saying, "Oh, is my ticket an e-ticket?" I was like, "Oh, I'm sure it is." And then I look over to my desk and there's a FedEx envelope with her ticket in it that had not yet been sent. And there's no way, FedEx doesn't deliver that fast. At huge expense, her ticket had to be reissued as an e-ticket without her ever knowing, and in order to get her to the country on time. So that was a bit of a drama. I worked later on at the Next Wave Festival in Melbourne, which was a youth arts festival. I worked there for four festivals, but one of which was presenting the Commonwealth Games cultural program. This photo is actually called the Dash and UN, which was a giant public art event where each nation of the world was represented by a Dashand. You could say a lot about kind of world politics based on, on Dashands. My role was there in a really tiny non-profit, so I also had the job of being the IT manager, fixing computers, and that included literally taking the side off computers and adding extra memory cards in the side, but also things like setting up venues for conferences and events at 5 a.m. down dark alleyways. In fact, we did a computer game conference where I reckon I probably had half a dozen gaming computers in the back of my car that was worth more than the sum total of my car at the time. As Annette said in the intro, I worked at Art Support Australia and Philanthropy Australia, working in the philanthropy space, fundraising, private wealth. And then 2.5 years ago, I ended up as the CEO of Brisbane Powerhouse, which, for the first time ever, I have my own executive support, which is... quite fantastic. I must admit, I didn't really know what to do initially, but we've worked it out. So that's one of the interior walls at Brisbane Powerhouse. So I kind of, when I was thinking about this, I thought, oh, well, you know, there are parallels so much in both roles, the role of CEO as well as the role of EA. I guess one of the first things is that the EA roles provide insight into the whole business, and that you're privy to a broad and deep spectrum of the whole organisation, and that is the same for the CEO. That's different to specialist departments. You know, you possibly know more than the head of marketing or more than the head of finance at times, because you've got that fantastically broad experience. And that's very much you know, my day is so incredibly varied, I need to sort of know what's going on everywhere all the time. And you need to have information on hand at all the at all times, be able to kind of grab that or know where to find things, even when others are definitely lost. One of the other traits is that discretion and confidentiality is absolutely paramount. And that isn't just about, you know, all the things that are overheard, but also knowing when to action things and having that extraordinary judgment of when to take that somewhere else and when to kind of go, hey, I know about this thing, or here's some insight that I can provide in order to move that along. Managing up is absolutely critical to all our roles. I have to serve as a board, and as I'm sure many of you do, and servicing a board is incredibly hard when they're not there. The board members are involved with the organisation for 2 hours a month, and so equipping them, as much as equipping your CEO or everyone else with the right information, the succinct and absolutely spot on information for them to make decisions and to take things to the next step is really critical. Customer service and stakeholder management. This comes back to that answering the phone in three rings is absolutely critical because that first response is about being the face of the organisation and sets the tone for the engagement that anyone else will have with your CEO or whoever you're looking after. And there is that sort of, you know, that real kind of medical receptionist kind of gatekeeper role, or it can be about how do you actually open the doors and be welcoming to people. So the role of the EA is often that kind of key interface with externals, and it is about that knowing who's who and being able to draw those connections. Who are you the gatekeeper to versus who do you kind of go and make the interrupt the key meeting in order for that conversation or that message to be passed on. So it's that tricky balance for all of us of gatekeeper versus facilitator. And then multitasking, drop everything and solve this, is probably a common directive to all of you, as it is often to me. And so, you know, being able to juggle everything. One of the parts of both my role and my EA's role is being an entertainment and hospitality specialist as well. So managing to put on everything from lunch for 20 through to all the coordinating staff, Christmas parties and everything else. And that is the most complex diplomatic role to keep everybody happy, especially when planning Christmas parties. And also I think recognising that why menial and small things make all the difference right now, and that sometimes having to do something that just seems quite trivial is actually the really critical thing. It might be lunch, it might be an are you okay, it might be a I just need this photocopied or I just need this sorted out, and how that enables the whole organisation to keep moving. And I think one of the things that we've often reflected on is that both roles can be really isolating. It is isolating being the CEO. You don't really have friends in the organisation. You know, when you have to turn around the next day and manage people, you have to. It is fairly lonesome, and often I think being an EA to a CEO can also be isolating because figuring out exactly where you fit in the organisation and there's always a level of guardedness because of the information and the insight that you're privy to. So we have to stick together. A few things that I've learned, I guess, is, you know, and so many of you are from non-profits here, and so it sort of, imagine, resonates, is working with purpose. Really, you know, why do you do what you do, and what change do you make in the world because of where you are? And there's some fantastic organisations represented here, and the great change that you make in the organisation, in the world, in fact, and why you get out of bed in the morning. Because I don't know about some of you guys, but in our case, we're not saving lives. You know, you have to keep it in perspective. So, you know, we all want to spend more time with our friends and family. So you should absolutely love what you do, and that's why I work in the non-profit sector. Another one of the philosophies that I feel very strongly about is leave loudly. I read recently about the CEO of PepsiCo International, who's kind of promoted this concept of leave loudly. I have 2 4.5-year-old twins, and so, you know, I'm everyone in the organisation knows that. They visit quite often. They think it's a pretty cool place to work because the chips and the pizza are really good at this house. And so, you know, making time for family and friends, but also, you know, it's not just about people with families. It's also about having a work-life balance and keeping all those things in perspective. So, you know, don't be ashamed of leaving early for family and commitments, and I try to lead by example and tell people that I'm going and whatever I'm off to. So that's a few kind of reflections and insights on my journey from EA to CEO and everything in between. I know many of you are interested in stepping into leadership roles and making that transition, so would be really happy in the discussion component to sort of talk more around some of the technical stuff. You know, getting your LinkedIn profile scrubbed up, how do you have that conversation with your boss about the next step, that sort of thing. So if that's of interest, make sure you add that to your paperwork. So an absolute privilege to be here today and look forward to talking more.
Thank you so much. Now, we'll have a 5-minute break, and what I would like you all to do, you'll all see that there's paper and pen on the table. So if you can all take time and have a bit of a discussion as a table and come up with some questions so that we can ask those to Fiona. And what we'll do, the twin staff will all go around, we'll pick up your questions in about 5 minutes' time, and then we'll go through them with Fiona. All right? Enjoy.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Right, Western Australia and South Australia. Thank you. the most questions that we have ever got to ask a speaker. So what we've done is gone through and seen if we've got sort of similar. So we'll work our way through it as much as possible, okay? So firstly, Fiona, how important was your EA in the transition to CEO?
Can I, just before answering that, I have to say, I was just saying in the break, we did this thing at work the other day. You know that TV show, You Can't Ask That?
Yeah.
So we've done this thing where each department kind of puts themselves forward and people across the rest of the organisation can anonymously ask questions. And myself and my colleague were the first ones and it was so terrifying. So this is nothing. This is awful.
How important was your EA in your transition to CEO?
Critical. Yes, really critical. I think in coming into this role at Brisbane Powerhouse, there's just the organising of my time and the management of the diary and all of that sort of thing. So that was really critical from an operational point of view. But it's the being able to ask the stupid questions and not being judged for it part. And I think the sort of second line in that question was, given that so many of you have to kind of upwards train the people that you are often looking after. So getting that insight, getting that sort of history piece, knowing where to find things, or even kind of questioning, oh, why is that done like that? Because we have a lot of, because it's always been done like that as a response. So that's been invaluable, really.
Many, many, many questions about that transition. So I guess judging from what everybody in the room has said, what made you decide to transition and how did you make that move?
So I guess the transition happened when I was at Next Wave, which was the Dashens. So I was there as an office support, I can't remember what title was, and then within that, I picked up a sort of a one day a week project, and that was sort of able to kind of prove my capacity to deliver a sort of standalone project. And then at a party, a few drinks with one of the sort of senior leaders of the organisation, and he sort of said, "Oh, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years or whatever?" And I was like, "Oh, I'd love to be the general manager of the organisation." And about 6 weeks later, he called me up and saying, "Oh, the general manager's left. I'd like you to apply for the job." And I was like, no, I couldn't do that. And he's like, "No, I do think you should give it a red hot go." I had the most terrible stomach pains, nervous anxiety, everything just was like, whoa. I remember going in for the interview and going in and lying on the couch right before I could kind of go in. I was so incredibly nervous. But, I think the organisation recognised at the time, I was pretty young at the time, that, you know, this was an opportunity to support me. The board committed to providing some really hands-on support. I had not only weekly meetings with the chair of the board, but I had monthly meetings with a couple of other people. So they really sort of worked to nurture me through that transition. So huge, but sometimes it is just about having really fantastic people around there outside who back you.
Another question, or quite a few questions, were about that study piece. So do you study? Don't you study? Should you study? Does study help?
Look, I have a master's in arts administration, which I have said many times I probably could have got out of a cornflake packet. I think that it's what you use the study for. It's about the networks that you create. It's about the places you interview in the project work. It's the connections in the group work. It's that kind of thing. And I still have very close professional contacts and friends from when I did my master's. And so it was an opportunity to get my foot in the door to look at lots of different organisations. I remember one of the subjects was around strategic planning, and the first assignment was analyse the strategic plan of an organisation. And one girl did Pizza Hut. It's like, well, she'd obviously found it online, you know, that this is Pizza Hut's choice. And that's, that is not achieving anything. It was an opportunity to go into an organisation and find a way to interview someone and put yourself in front of them and find out their inner workings. So study for study's sake, no, but if you're using it and leveraging it, then absolutely. And then it's just that challenge of kind of going, all right, what's the relative thing? What's the high quality thing? I'd love to do an MBA at Harvard. My house is not worth that much. So some of the subjects I did as part of my master's were online, and I really struggled because of missing that connection with peers. So I think that's just a lens that you probably want to put on things before embarking on, you know, an online MBA or that sort of thing, is that what are you going to get out of it?
Mentors is another question that everybody has asked about. What types of mentors have you used, especially, you know, changing from more into admin and working your way through to where you are now? And do you still have mentors?
Yes, absolutely. And also, I guess the other way around, I do a bit of mentoring in the other direction as well. So especially in that transition time, the people who were my referees, I had long conversations with about any step I was making from a career point of view, because I'd need them to make the case for me as a referee when they were speaking to the people doing the recruiting. So that was really critical. People who've got your back going, well, just throw your hat in the ring. I think there is, you know, one of those sort of staggering statistics about the difference between men and women, that women need to have 9 of the 10 selection criteria with proven experience before they'll apply for a job, whereas men might have 2 of the 10 and go, yeah, I can do that. And so, you know, we need to get so much better at just kind of putting ourselves forward, you know, for opportunities. So I also participated in a formal mentoring program in that first year of being the CEO at NextWave. That was run by a now defunct organisation, sadly, called Nonprofit Australia, and they matched up a nonprofit CEO with a kind of corporate CEO or high-level leader. And that was a structured mentoring program, is just gold. You set your time every month, you meet with them for 2 hours, regardless of, it's not about waiting to have a problem to talk about, it's working through things. You know, and I remember particularly one of the things I put in my goals at the outset of that mentoring program was really struggled with conflict resolution and confrontation, and frankly, I'm sure everybody struggles with that. And so one of the things we did was this woman got one of her colleagues at National Bank to role play a scenario. They videoed it with me and then gave me feedback on my ability to deal with this. And apparently her staff member had an absolute ball, being completely obnoxious as a way to road test this scenario. So yeah, very, very effective.
What is something that your EA does that makes your life easier? Professionally or personally?
Oh, too many things. Look, I think it's the being 2 days ahead of me at all times is one of the key things. And it's that, have you got this ready? Is there anything I need to prepare for this meeting? Often my days in the last couple of weeks have literally, it's scheduling in lunchtime, which she also does, so that at least there's a half an hour break. So I don't have time to think ahead myself. So it's having all those sort of things in order. I think personally, it's just, you know, having that great relationship. We've always got something to chat about. There's always, when things have been catastrophic for one reason or another, it's let's go get a glass of wine, which is good, having a bar in the building. and just being that kind of radar on the organisation that I can't be just through the time, but also just who I am. So, so many things.
When other people are thinking of transitioning into other roles or higher level roles, and they might be at that EA level now, what types of positions do you think they should be looking towards now to work their way through to moving up?
It's tricky, isn't it? Because it's not like there's a kind of a generalist you know, a deputy generalist, and then you become the general manager, and then you become the whatever. You know, you often have to sort of specialise and then come back in. And I guess I had a role where I was the sort of office support as well as marketing for a small organisation. I think a lot of the skill set that EAs would have would transition well to marketing. Fundraising is another one. Fundraising is such a growing sector in the nonprofit sector, segment of the nonprofit sector. And in fact, my EA did a secondment to our development department recently because we work so closely together. So having an understanding of how fundraising works has been really critical. So it is probably about sort of picking up some additional skill set, special projects or project management, you know, where there's an opportunity that something comes up within the organisation. But it is about having a really frank conversation, you know, with your manager about those intentions, so that you could pick up some projects or some things on the side, or even be empowered to kind of have some time to do things in other organisations. So join the board of a small community organisation, do some volunteering, you know, have a mentor and have that sort of time away from the office to approved in order to participate in those things. One of the things we've got running at Brisbane Powerhouse at the moment is a management program for middle managers, and that's people with management aspirations as well as people who are in management roles at the moment. We found that people were leaving the organisation and saying, well, there was nowhere for me to go. And so we've created this program with the intent that A, people might stay longer, but also that when they do get promoted internally or they're project managing specific things internally, that they've got a stronger skill set. So my EA is participating in that program, which is really fantastic. You know, already we're seeing some good things across the organisation come out of that.
One more question. I think we have time for just one more.
Dessert has just arrived.
I know. I'm hurrying. Work-life balance. You must be so very busy with the role that you have, with your family life, and as well as, you know, when you were studying as well. And I believe that every time I have an EA breakfast, it comes up every time. What do I do about work-life balance? How do other people manage that? How do you manage that work-life balance?
Well, there's a lot of layers to it. And in fact, that was one of the questions that came up in the "You Can't Ask That" section thing that we did at work. Look, when I was studying, that was pre-children, and I don't know what I did with all the spare time I had pre-children. You know, for years after studying, because I ended up doing it part-time and all that sort of thing, you'd end up with this guilt that, oh, there's a weekend, I'm not reading some set text or whatever. So, you know, that was hard to be on and off again. And I must admit, any professional development I do now, I'm not interested in anything with assignments or exams. I went to Stanford earlier in the year and did a course there, and the great thing it was I was in and out in 5 days and there was no assessments required. But I think, look, since then, it is a great juggle. My husband is the primary carer of our children, which helps immensely. And I really try to support the men in our workplace to be more active parenting in their families, to take their paternity leave, to take as many sick days as their partners are in order to look after their kids, all of that sort of thing. And I also have a cap of 2 nights out a week. A big part of my role is attending shows, events, networking functions, all of that sort of thing. And so I kind of have to pick and choose and prioritise. But, you know, work-life fusion, I think, is the new term, actually. It's not work-life balance. And it's finding that blend of, well, yeah, I get up in the morning and I check my email, or if I'm sitting on the couch of an evening, I was writing Christmas cards on the couch of an evening in the last few days. But the flip side of that is that, well, you know, my kids came in for a coffee during work, you know, you sort of balance those things out. I think that's obviously a trickier in an EA role where you're often required to be there physically, but I think that's just the way the modern workplaces are transitioning to. So finding that blend and finding what you can control is going to be our challenge for the future.
I'd like to ask Liv Moore to please pop up and have a few words. Thank you.
I just wanted to say, on behalf of Windsor Group and the Office Support Enrichment Committee, OSEC, to thank you, Fiona, for coming and speaking to us today. I'm sure that this time of year, with Christmas around the corner, it's extremely busy for you, and to take 2 hours out of your day and come and inspire us all. You know, hearing a story such as yours, I think really gives us a bit of hope that you can do that transition, but also reminds us some of the stories you say that we're not alone. We can have to wear the many hats sometimes. We've been told to, you know, drop it. And maybe we're being flexible, being an Uber driver or delivering wine around the place, or being creative, trying to reissue tickets. And that a lot of what we do every day, sometimes you can feel quite alone and isolated, and it's really reassuring to hear that our exec feels that too. I'd never really thought about it from his perspective before. So I think, yeah, a lot of what you've touched on has really hit home for me. And I definitely hope that some of you women get that confidence that Fiona's trying to give us of having that frank conversation with our leaders and you know, trying to grow and transition ourselves. But thank you so much for taking the time, and thank you to Ange also for making this happen.
Concludes the more formal part of today. However, we do have Lucky Door Prize. Yay! So what I'd like to do is ask if Sarah and Fiona can draw out some raffle tickets. So you should have your raffle tickets behind your name tag. So please have a look, make sure you've got them in front of you. We've got a few prizes today. We've got some fabulous sponsors, Brisbane Powerhouse being one, Sofitel, United Office Choice, Rush, Grand Central Cellars. So really good sponsors, so we thank them as well for today. Here we go. I've always wanted to do this. Red A32.
How nice, thank you very much.
Oh, goodness, I don't know very well.
Red A33. So a big drum roll. Oh, well done. Red A30. Congratulations to all our winners. That's fabulous. Just in closing, I'd like to say thank you again to see you all here again. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you next year as well. I'd like to say a big thank you to our committee, the Office Support Enrichment Committee, Ange Kirkland, Linda Bauman, Liv Moores, Naz Whippy and Robin Clark. So thank you very, very much. It would be very difficult to do anything like this without you. So we really appreciate all of you. We've got some big things happening next year and some very exciting things on the come up. We have on March 21 another one of our professional development days. This one's going to be a half-day conference. So we'll have hopefully one or two keynote speakers for the morning and then go into a World Cafe-style professional development after that. So we'd love to see you there, most definitely. Obviously, we've got International Women's Day breakfast in March and Office Support Professional Days on the 4th of May. So I'd love to see you all again then as well. We've also got some other exciting news coming up. We have been offering so much as the committee and the Windsor Group, and we've seen so many people become very, very involved, and I can see a real community building within the Office Support community. We're looking at offering a membership organisation. So what we'd like to do is to send out a survey, and we'd really love you to fill out the survey with what you would like to see in such an organisation. That would be that would make my heart glad and Amy's heart glad to see what your feedback would be. So if you could please take the time to do that, and that way we can be more focused and offer you something next year that you're really going to get a lot of value out of, and we'd be very proud to do. Yeah. One thing as well, also keep in mind mentoring. We're going to try and make that a little bit different and a little bit more targeted next year. So please bear that in mind too when you're filling out your survey. Okay. So I wish you all a safe and happy Christmas and a safe and happy New Year. I'm really looking forward to seeing you all again in 2018, and all the best. Thank you for coming.